Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show, where ordinary heroes tell extraordinary stories during unique and never been heard before conversations with your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Hillary's unique listening and way of asking questions results in conversations that aren't usually talked about, so you can create the life that you really want but are afraid you can't really have. We are demonstrating the greatness in the human spirit and creating a world where we all reclaim our birthright of joy, happiness, purpose, and passion. Now, here's your host, Hillary Arno Burns. Welcome to the Getting Real with Hillary show. And today we have a very, very special guest. Before I introduce her, I am going to promote my third book. I'll keep you in suspense a little bit longer. It's called Your Bullshit is Your Blessing, How to Stop Fixing Yourself and Start Having Fun. If there's anything you think is wrong with yourself that you've been trying to fix your whole life, well, this is the book for you. Because I was trying to fix myself, and finally I realized, you know what? It's not going to happen after all these years. So here's the secrets. I have three phases, three stages, and really, you can create freedom and a life you love. Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. Find it on Amazon. Thank you. All right. Now that I've kept you in suspense, today we have Brigitte Denek. She was born in northern France, which you'll see with her lovely accent. Brigitte is a voice coach with a difference. And what she does is so special. Her mission is that people are empowered through authenticity of breath and voice and authenticity of listening. Now, she is not your everyday voice coach. She is truly special. And I want to welcome Brigitte, and I can't wait for you to tell your story, you know, talk about your work and how you're making a difference in the world. So, welcome.
Thank you.
Hello.
Hillary, good to see you.
So, yes. All right. So this is going to be very exciting because Brigitte does a truly special work that I've never heard of anyone else doing in the world. And she might even do a little demo at the end. So let's discuss. But, you know, you were talking about your childhood, about your father. Do you want to just tell us a little bit about that and how what you do relates to that kind of, I don't know if it's a traumatic childhood, but what you went through as a child. Go ahead.
Yeah, thank you. The way it started, I could just focus on a specific incident where my father came home and he was keen to stab the neighbor. And he had taken scissors. Anyway, whatever the details, it was a big, big shock. And what followed is that he was diagnosed as alcoholic, and alcoholic families are characterized by don't speak, don't trust, and don't feel. So that's what I was. That's how I grew up. I didn't speak, didn't trust, didn't feel. And that led me to being very, very interested in studies. I was passionate. I was first of the class. I learned languages, everything. It was my passion. So that's how my childhood went. And I even, after studies and studies, I thought, well, maybe I'd like to be a journalist and I'd like to do postgraduate studies in Paris, in that prestigious Institut d'Etudes Politiques, where I would learn to be a journalist and where many politicians come from. And so I went to Paris. I was very happy to leave northern France, actually. And then, yes.
Can I ask you a question? All right, hold that thought. We're going to the Institute of Paris in a second. But when you were growing up and you said your father wanted to stab your neighbor, Was he really going to do it? Was it an idle threat, or was he about to go do it?
We never know. Because it never.
We don't know, but it was just the fear. It was the fear, or well, it was
like something not expected and something that he seemed he was going to do.
Okay. And was that your first memory of something being wrong, do you think?
I think so. Yeah, pretty much. Yeah. Mm.
So you're going along your life, boom, boom, boom. All of a sudden, your father wants to stab the neighbor. Uh-oh. And then you find out he's an alcoholic. Now, did you already have don't feel, don't talk? I know you don't have it. You probably weren't aware of it, but you were already knowing that you had to be careful, so to speak.
Yeah, I was very, I behaved very well. Yeah. Yeah.
From childhood.
From childhood, yeah. Mm.
Don't get him upset. Don't get him mad. That kind of thing.
Yeah.
I mean, I had that too. My father was a wonderful man, lovely, but a couple times I saw him get really, really angry. And I also was like, don't get anyone upset because it's dangerous, you know, like deathly afraid. And so I also became good, like tried to be good. You could never be that good because eventually something happened, but tried to be good. Is that like how you were? Then you studied, you got really good at studying.
Oh yeah.
That was how you compensated, right?
Yeah. 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 Yeah.
Okay. So you got into the Institute of, how do you say it? You say it so nicely.
Institut d'études politiques.
Oui. Okay, good. All right. All right, so go ahead. So you get to college, right? What you call it, university. How do you say it? You say it so nice. University?
Institut d'études politiques, which is a postgraduate institution.
Oh, it was. Okay, where did you go undergrad?
I went to Lille University. I studied German.
Oh, So were you still home then? So this was your escape to go to Paris?
Yeah.
Okay. All right, good. So now you're in your, what, 20?
Yeah, hardly, yeah, 20.
Okay. All right, good. All right. So you get to Paris. Go ahead.
In Paris, and I'm studying hard. And yeah, with those teachers, professors, and writing papers and so on. And then in May 68, actually, I was in a library and I see through the window that police was chasing students with batons. Ah, and I look, I get informed. It was 3rd of May. It was the very, very beginning of something which was going to be a very major, major shift in society and in culture. So I couldn't stay away from that. From that moment, I was involved. And what happened was with my colleagues or comrades or co-students, we occupied the Institut d'Etudes Politiques and we had a press office. And meanwhile, some others were throwing cobblestones at police and the government was in trouble and lots of things changed.
And what were you, you know, because I'm not really aware, what were you fighting for? What were you standing for?
It was really, it started with students being chased by police for probably something minor. Okay. And then it became wanting a revolution, like those in power down and something. Some people were into communism, some into anarchism, Mao Zedong, the Chinese version, all that was growing.
So you were basically wanting to overthrow the government.
Yeah, that was the word. Once I said to one of my fellow revolutionaries, I told him, "Oh, I think we should challenge the government." He said, "No, overthrow." That was the word. Yeah, definitely.
So was it exciting? And I mean, was it exciting, scary?
What was exciting is we were all on the street. People talked to each other. People wrote poetry on the walls. It was really like an explosion of creativity at the same time. And that was very important, an important component. Hence, there was something written on the wall, which was under the cobblestones, you'll find the beach. Something like that. We were finding freedom.
Wow. You know,
like from the upbringing I had, and many of my, contemporaries, we discovered we could invent something new. That was really the idea.
Wow. Yeah. So you were really at the center of it, right?
I lived on Boulevard Saint-Michel, which was right in the middle of Latin Quarter, and I could walk to my university and so on.
Wow. Okay. All right. So what happened? That's amazing, right?
Yeah.
Really amazing. You were like in the middle of the stuff. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. So after that, I had planned a year in America, so which I did, and got involved there as well a little bit, and then came back to study theater, because I found that that's how I could transmit a message that was more than something you could write in an article. And writing was not as much my thing, if you like, as displaying on the street what happened and leading discussions, all that,
And so what were you, like you said you went to America and got into it there. What were you into? Was it still the overthrow or just creativity? Yeah. Like what were you representing?
Well, in America, I just did a year of exchange, where I taught in a college, and then some things happened then. I participated more or less, but there was no, it was not as intense when I was in America. Then, but I wrote actually a thesis about women's liberation. So that was also something that I found fundamental. Yeah. So it was women, what oppression, what liberation.
Wow.
I wrote it for Paris University. And so then I went back to Paris and I studied theater. That was what I wanted to do. And what I realized was my language, since childhood, I had loved, setting up performances as a game, and then when these revolutions happened, I found that it was a way to transmit what was happening, to go on the street and perform and do, and there was all kinds of theaters appearing at that time. So in America, there was the Living Theater. Life and theater were they lived their life like theater and theater like their life. But there's a lot to say about that. But there were different trends, and in Poland there was another trend, and the name was Grotowski. And once they met one night, actually, and they compared what they were doing, and that the Living Theater was more prone to go towards mass transformation, and the Polish theater more inclined to do a personal transformation. And that's the one I turned to.
Wow.
after studying for a degree in a new university that was built like a mushroom immediately in the aftermath of 68. Yeah. So it was in the
world. Okay, I have a question. When you say you used the theater to transmit like what had happened in Paris, like you wanted to let people know that there was a revolution, that yeah. like what exactly, how did you do, like how do you do, I mean, I'm assuming it's not theater as we know it with a script and you go through, you know, the show, a set show. This was something different. You were performing and how does that work?
Like creating a structure with a few people on the street and performing it, like let's say students being beaten up by cops, and then building something from that, and people starting to look and to ask what it was, and then answering what it was, what happened, etc.
Oh, okay. So you acted out what happened in Paris to let them know what was going on. I see.
Yes. And further, yeah, I just gave you a small example.
Yeah. Okay. But so you were acting out the events so that people could learn about them and then discuss them. And okay, that's cool. Okay. All right. Good. Thank you. All right. So then you went to Poland. And so you decided instead of mass transformation, you were going to focus on the personal with the Grotowski.
Yes.
Right? Is that where you were at? Okay.
Yes, that's right. I had studied 3 years in Paris. Yeah. We skipped 3 years now.
Oh, okay.
So I want to mention I studied all the areas of theater, but it was more acting. Yeah. Okay. And we created collective performances. So it was very, very interesting.
What does collective mean?
Collective means everyone had a say in what the performance was going to be. It arose from improvisations.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
And a common purpose. So we worked a lot with the body, and actually we worked both teachers and students who were naked because we were really free. And it was very serious, by the way. It's the same university where famous philosophers, all the famous people who were kind of revolutionary were there in one place in the woods near Paris. And in the theater department, it was a big hall. And there we had our classes, different classes. There was body expression. There was mainly body expression and creating performances and puppets and literature. There were also some traditional theater, not much. It was really creating anew what theater was going to be. Mm. Yeah.
Did you love that? Did you love it?
I loved it. Yeah. It was a very exciting time. Yeah.
Because you were create, like which part? You were create, just like you were a pioneer, right? You were kind of.
Yes. Yes. And
paving the way for, like you were changing the world, kind of.
Yeah.
You
know? Yeah. It was. Yeah,
it's crazy, right? Yeah. Okay, good. So that was, and you were, how old were you now? You were like still young 20s, right?
Yes, by then I was maybe 25, 26.
Okay. Okay,
and
well.
That's when I got a grant to go to Poland. In the meantime, yeah, I will skip the trip to America, but we did a show with in a train station. A show with people. It was an exchange. We went to America and stayed at the university there. And we brought together a show. It was great too.
Which city were you in?
It was Las Vegas, New Mexico.
Wow.
New Mexico.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
Great.
What a time you had. Yes. Okay. Go ahead. So then you. Right. So now you're in Poland, right? Go ahead.
In Poland. And so in Poland, why did I choose that? I chose that because there was a book that Grotowski had written, which was Towards a Poor Theater. And by that, he meant the actor and the actor's training and the actor going really being fully engaged in training and in performance. So it was about being fully engaged. And after I read that book, I thought, that's what I want. That is the best in the world. So I applied for a scholarship, a grant, and got it. And then I was there. And I spent a year and a half there. And it was there too. It became all the time it moved forward. Yeah. So there in Poland, it was the last show that was a show, last performances of the last show of Grotowski. It was called Apocalypsis Configuris. It's Latin. And it's just, it was built from improvisations and the words came on top, poetry in particular. Now, what came before the performance was a very intense and very precise training. The training was such, you did acrobatics and you did also what they called plastic exercises, which was that each part of the body would be alive. And alive, why? Because everything started from work on the lower body, on the pelvis, which is the base, the base, where everything, all the energy comes from. So that I still have with me, if you like. It's not past. So I trained with them and even led a workshop with them towards the end of my stay. And there were also new initiatives which went now outside theater. And outside theater was called para theater. And what happened was in 75, a university, summer university, where big names of theater were invited and each had a workshop. There was Jean-Louis Barrault, French, of course, although Peter Brook, you may know, he was of British origin, and then many Americans as well, Andre Gregory and Joe Chaykin, so people I had known from their books and who were there for that gathering. And so that showed all the new trends in theater.
And was that still Poland? Were you still in Poland?
Yes, or was all in Wrocław. That's a city in Poland where Grotowski had his theater, Laboratorium. It was a laboratory.
Wow.
And the year after, already it was different. There were some events inside, and they were called either openings or beehives in that room that had been used for shows. And there were many events outside. And one project was the Mountain Project. And leaders took people to the top of the mountain, and there are moments, days actually, of silence. And after a few days, you arrived at the mountain at the night, and there were more improvisations, singing, dancing, very, yeah, it, it
this was new. Like, no one had done this stuff. This was all like revolutionary and right.
It was certainly new because it was created from the old, but towards something new. Actually, Grotowski called this the theater of sources, and he took a lot of inspiration from rituals as well.
Before that, was it just like Shakespeare stage stuff, very to a form? Was this like, this whole thing was brand new, this whole creation? You know, when you say, yeah, it was revolutionary. Say more about that. Which part, like what it was bringing with the body and all that, was that all new?
Well, what was new is that focus on the actors, on the people acting, or later not even acting, but to probably going towards rituals, giving a shape to something that would allow people to, something to happen between people. Like I remember one time we were in a, there was a time of when during those big gatherings in the big room where performances had taken place before, and in the room when it was performances, the audience was around the room and the actors in the middle. Now, when it became something else, there was a group of people in that room, people who came from everywhere, and improvisation. And while people were improvising very freely with some elements, some object, or rather natural elements, like maybe plants, you know, grains, things like that. Some songs arose. And so it was like musical movement. And one day I found myself in this whole group. I saw that people were closing, were just turning to each other and becoming small units, if you like, two by twos, and couples. And then I started singing something very simple. And then the whole room changed, like opened. It was it was a nice experience that happened in those, in this framework, if you like.
So the audience, tell me if I'm getting this wrong. Before this, there were the actors on the stage and the audience. This was more everyone was together. The actors were mixed with the audience. And did the audience participate as actors? So there was no difference? People were
pretty
all...
Pretty much.
Wow.
They were leaders.
Yeah.
Leaders, but not not actors and audience.
Wow. So when you were obviously an actor and you just started singing. That's what called you to be. Was that the first time you had done that?
Well, it was a unique experience. That's what I can say. I had done many things, but not that. It's creation. Yeah.
Yeah.
It may sound like not much, but it was really creating the conditions for people to create something new. And it was called encounter. It was called... different ways, but it was the way it went then.
So that's, so when you said, you know, instead of transformation of the individual, I can't, I can't.
Yeah, I don't think. Anyway,
this was how the group transformed, because they were all in this, they were experiencing something together.
Yeah.
That was new. And they were a part of it with you. There wasn't a separation between actors and audience.
Yeah.
They were in this, like an experiential moment, right?
Yeah.
Wow. That sounds so cool. So, all right. So we, all right, I want to hear what's next, but let's go, since we're about halfway through, let's go to our commercial break, and then we'll come back and we'll find out how you, you know, obviously I'm sort of getting the sense of what you were talking about with the voice, how it comes through, but we're going to get more of that in the second half.
All right.
But first we're going to go to our sponsors. All right. We'll be right back.
Has social-emotional learning become just one more thing on your teachers' plates? Do teachers and students both find it boring and ineffective? Then bring Kikori to your school. Kikori transforms classrooms through experiential SEL activities that help students play, reflect, connect, and grow. Even better, students say it's more fun than recess. Schedule a no-obligation conversation at kikoriapp.com/bringkikori. K-I-K-O-R-I.
Do you ever feel like you can't say what you really want to say? Or that you're stuck or in a holding pattern in your relationships, career, personal life, or finances? Are there things you want in life that you've given up on? Are you resigned that this is as good as it's going to get? If you answered yes to any of these questions, then Hillary Burns, host of the Getting Real with Hillary show, has the solution you need. Hillary is a published author of 3 books and has a program called the Getting Real Process. This process frees you from what is holding you back, allowing you to create a life you love. Don't believe it? It is hard to believe that it could work, isn't it? The proof is that hundreds of Hillary's clients have used the Getting Real Process and are now free to create whatever they want in relationships, career, finances, enjoying life, or just loving themselves more. So go to RealTalkWithHillary.com and order Hillary's book, Real Talk, and set up a conversation.
Thank you, as always, to our sponsor, KikoriApp.com. If you want to bring experiential social-emotional learning to your schools, to your companies, go to KikoriApp.com and schedule an appointment. You can schedule it with Haley. She's my daughter. She works for KikoriApp.com. It's an incredible thing, and it ties right into what we're talking about here with Brigitte, which is experiencing. It's not just, you're not just reading about it. You're not just looking at it. You are part of it. So that's what we're going to keep talking about. If you feel stuck in any way and you don't feel free to speak, go to realtalkwithhillary.com, schedule time to talk with me, and we will get you free. And if you haven't heard of my 3rd book, Your Bullshit is Your Blessing. This is also about being able to be yourself instead of fixing yourself, having more fun. And if you want to hear more, get up to date with what's happening on the Getting Real with Hillary show, please subscribe to my newsletter, which you can find at gettingrealwithhillary.com. As always, if you like our shows, please follow them, share them, like them, tell your friends about them, because we are all about spreading the word, getting people inspired, saying what people aren't talking about, and creating a world where we are all free to create lives we love. So back to Brigitte. We're going to hear more about, this is fascinating, about what was happening back in the 60s and 70s in the theater movement. Welcome back. Wow. I feel like I want to be in that audience with you experiencing it, you know? So anyway, okay. So there you were in Poland. And then what happened?
And then Then back to Paris, finding a theater which didn't suit me because it was theater that time. And then moving ahead with therapy, because I was also in therapies and trying to find my own life, if you like. I had a life with what everything I was doing. And then I explored therapies. I explored more actually self-development in a form I called acting dynamics. That was really interesting. People got to discover themselves through literature, through the characters, especially whether it was plays or novels, and from that having their performance within the workshop. So that's something I love doing, and on and on. And at one point, after doing a lot of emotional therapy, which was what I chose to come to terms with my past, I discovered something which was really another discovery. I was told there was this discipline, or what shall I call it? Voice coaching, maybe? Mm-hmm. Okay. I was not looking for voice work, but I went there because I was looking from the therapies I had experienced. I was looking for something still. So I went there, and I immediately had some new sensations through something that was body work, pure body work, in certain postures, align the body and vocalize and breathe and vocalize and breathe and vocalize. And then something new. I found something new in my body, which was new sensations. And when I felt that, I knew what was right and what was true to me, if you like. So I was in Paris. I was involved with very interesting things. I was part of different communities. And I found that in some way, I was complying. Mm. I was still being
a good girl
by certain rules. Maybe not rules, but for me, I found I was limited in many ways. Limited in my career. I was at the time, I was doing little things in the world of theater or doing communication workshops or for companies, and then teaching English.
And when you say limited, do you mean in what you could say? Or you just felt constrained?
Just constrained as a whole.
Okay.
And it was me doing that.
But it was like, like physical, like you were physically.
Not necessarily. But I was looking for something. I was in many things.
Okay.
And physically, yes, when I went from place to place teaching, or it was more the fact that I was still conforming. Mm. I had this feeling when I started having those sensations, it was, I need to cut through that.
Okay.
And so I I started to leave things I was part of. It was like, you know, when you are part of something, some association, fraternity, sorority, whatever, there is constraints, although there is also support and so on. But I felt I had to move and be myself. So while I was starting to feel that, I also, you know, felt this work on voice and breath was giving me some freedom with myself. Yeah? Freedom. And something, I felt better, right? And I could, so I did that and I practiced, and the more I did it, the better I felt. Like, yes, I'm in my power. Right?
Wow. Yeah.
Enjoyable breathing and voicing or making sound and breathing. And there was something great in that. And that made me keen to continue and even to take the training. Mm-hmm. And it led me to London because I looked where I could be more myself than in Paris, where I was involved in different kinds of things, but where I could have roots in a way. It may sound strange because I was French, I was in Paris, but Paris was limiting, mm-hmm. career-wise already. So I wanted to have some way to build something that would be more me. Mm. Yeah. And so with this work going on, the physical voice, breath work, I started moving in my life and moving physically. Then I moved to London. London being a place where there's much, I'd say, much more opportunities than Paris, and more communication between people.
Wow. So
you know, it may not be true for everybody, but that's what I felt attracted me. And then I kept going. And but at one point, you know, in that search for myself, one point I thought, but what am I doing? I should have a pension, something, you know, mm-hmm. do something. So I'm jumping from one thing where I get freedom to one thing where I start doubting and saying, okay, where am I going now? And when I did that, I stopped the training I took a sabbatical, and my attempt to study for secondary education failed miserably. I was so offended, so desperate that I couldn't be what I wanted at one particular moment, that it couldn't succeed, you know. So yeah. I failed. And then one point I went to Belgium to have one of those singing sessions where you work individually. And I worked individually with my coach, Serge Wilfard, his name. So with a little group. And whereas having failed, I was so miserable, I couldn't sleep, couldn't eat. Suddenly, I felt, I didn't know what I felt at that point, but people around me said, what? All we can experience from you is peace and serenity. That was the starting point for me to build my life in the UK.
Wow.
Yeah. I then did what I needed to do to have a job, but at the same time continue the training. I actually taught young people another adventure that for 12 years I taught, not the secondary, but higher, you know, 16 to 19, and then adults. It was also exciting. And then I was able, little by little, to build my life with the voice coaching. Mm. That was really the thing that was growing in that time. So that has grown since. I have been here in the UK and grown this and grown it internationally.
Wow.
I work with colleagues, but also trainees now. It's worth sharing it. So
yeah.
I can share it with you if you like.
Sure. Yes. Yes. So but that's amazing. So how many years ago was it when you just said, this is what I'm going to do? Like, you know, you've done it.
So 94 is when I had my first got in touch with that.
Yeah.
And 98, I moved to the UK. Then 2001, failure. 2003, everything.
Wow. So that's 20 years. 20 years, yeah.
20 years, yes.
Yeah. Mm. All right, so what can we do? Let's see. What are we going to do?
Oh, so I'm intimidated by you, but...
No. I'm ready to...
The process. So, first of all, let go... And sitting in your seat, let go against your seat, like you're slouching slightly. And people in the audience can try that too.
Okay.
So you just sit in your seat and let go a little bit, just to feel comfortable. Are you comfortable? Yeah?
Yes.
So now you bring one arm across your body, lifting your arm. Yeah, so do it again because I want you to do this on an in-breath. Yes. So now you can bring both arms like this. And be careful not to arch. Yeah, so you're still letting go against the seat. And the arms go backwards a bit, yeah? Not too much. Look at mine, yeah?
Okay.
And now you are going to do a... Ah, pretty good. So let's go even more against the seat. All right. Let me wear my glasses to see you better.
I'm looking at my arms. I'm like, should have worn sleeves. Okay, now that I've said that.
No. You're fine. You're great. And then you could actually take the sides of your seat. If you can move your camera slightly. Like this is okay. And press... Either you have a table in front of you or you have a seat where you can put your hands on the side. Yes?
Okay. Yeah.
So where are your hands? I don't see them.
They're on the table.
On the table. Very good.
Yeah.
So now you are on the table and you go, you flex a little bit these arms and then that's an exercise I call the lift. So you raise.
Show me your arms.
All right.
Yeah, okay.
So here are my arms.
Yeah.
And here are my table.
Okay.
Right? So I put my arms on my table.
Okay.
And so I'll show you now the top.
Okay, you want me to do that?
More from here, yeah? More from down, because you're lifting, so you are lifting from your chair, aren't you?
You want me to get up?
So now, can you lift from your chair when you...
No, because I'm not wearing, I'm just wearing my bottoms. Okay.
All right. So like this. Yeah. So again. Oh. Yes. And one more. Oh. And one after me, we'll alternate now.
Okay.
Oh. More from below. Yeah, so that's excellent exercise to let go a little bit and have more air and more force, more power, I should say, in your pelvis. Because you hang between your arms, or you hang from the table, and you are, because you are pressing the table, then you are lifting from your chair. Yeah?
Yeah.
If I'm and then what? Chair.
Oh, you want me to do it again?
Good, good. You see, more and more you find it inside. And that's what's important. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I can see I'm inhibited by how I look and what camera, you know what I mean? And I think I feel not so free. But as I keep doing it, it's like, let it go. So I could see what's not free. Right?
And
look,
and you can get free.
Yeah.
It's a way to build up this freedom.
Wow. That's really cool. Yeah, I could see where I'm not free, but I could see, so that's how you work with people. You work with people body and voice, right?
Body and voice, individually. Yeah.
You know, most people, when you think of a voice coach, you think of singing, but this is really more body voice. Like, this is very different than what we would think, right?
Yeah. I could say it's not about you fitting the music.
Right.
It's about you.
Yeah.
We try to sing, and it's fine because there is music to sing, and professional singers, They will get trained to do that.
Yeah.
And here, it can help professional singers.
Right. So this is really cool. I mean, I want to do more. But so we're almost running out of time. I want to make sure people know how to find you. Brigitte has offered a complimentary session to anybody who reaches out. You can find her at beyourvoice.co.uk, or you can email at bdenek. So B and then D as in dog, E, N as in Nancy, E-C-K at beyourvoice.co.uk. And we'll have that in the notes. And you can reach out to Brigitte and get, you know, she calls it a free taster, which I love, a complimentary session. And then Brigitte, you had said, you know, just in closing, we have about a minute. What you want is that more people are aware of their power and not to pretend in their body. What would you like to say in closing so that people really get your stand, you know, for the world and for people?
Yeah, my stand is that people are free, that you know already, and that, you know, we have different blocks that express themselves in different ways, but once we get free from them, we find a voice that's so a path, I would say. The breath and the voice are a path to bliss. I experienced it in this work. We're working with people. Amazing. When really the voice is present, it's worth everything. And with that, you know, it may be moments and really magical moments of communication or dialogue, something between people. And that's why I extend now to listening and speaking as something we can keep inquiring into and doing more and more. That's my commitment as well.
Wow. Well, thank you. That's really beautiful. And I don't know anyone who wouldn't want more moments of magic and bliss. So definitely reach out to Brigitte. Again, beyourvoice.co.uk or bdenek@beyourvoice.co.uk. And thank you so much for being here. It's a beautiful message. You know, this show is all about people being free, saying what you're afraid to say, and, you know, being inspired to create a life you love. So thank you for being a part of it. Thank you for what you're doing in the world. And I hope everyone reaches out to you. I certainly want to. I want to get that free taster and do more of that when I'm not limited to this chair. So thank you again.
Thank you, Lori. It was really great being with you.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you for watching this episode. I started getting real with Hillary when I discovered that I was a people-pleasing, pleasant phony and wanted to be more of my real self. We can grow together. If you will like the show, subscribe to my channel, and share this episode with your friends and family so that we can have a world that's more real.